Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Chris Logan, 17 years of career experience, a battalion chief over training with Georgetown Fire Department in Kentucky. Growing up, Chris was undecided with what he wanted to do with his career. While managing a restaurant and missing a milestone in his son's life, Chris knew the job he was in wasn't sitting right with him internally. So he quit, went to EMT school, and pursued a career in the fire service. After obtaining a fire department job, Chris wanted to be close to home. As a Georgetown native, he knew that Georgetown Fire was home. After finally getting on his department, his dreams were fulfilled, and with whom he surrounded himself with and what he wanted to achieve in his life has come full circle. Leave it better than you found it is all Chris wants to do. With that, I present Chris Logan.
My name is Chris Logan. I'm the training chief at the Georgetown Fire Department here in Kentucky. I've been 17 years in the fire service all career. I spent 9 years as a company officer, just recently promoted. Father of two, one boy that is 19 and another boy that's 12. Been married for 12 years, roughly a little over 12 years. And that's about it. That's me in a nutshell right there.
Okay.
Most important things.
Okay. All right.
I got into the fire service. Man, I was trying to think about this. It's kind of a blur at this point on why I got into the first fire service. I'm first generation. Nobody ever some military service in my family's background, but no fire service. I went to college for a couple of years, realized that wasn't the path that I needed to take. And that was around 99 that I got out of the college experience and started trying out for fire departments. Didn't know what I was doing. Then 9/11 hit and knew what I wanted to do, but so did everybody else. So it took a while to get into it. I actually backed out of trying to get into the fire service and got into the restaurant business for about, 4 or 5 years. My oldest son was born, missed a birthday because of flipping steaks, and realized this is not why I want to miss family events. I want to do what I love and have a little better explanation. And, went back, dropped out of being a manager at a restaurant at that time, went to EMT school, and the rest is history.
Okay. Were you born and raised in Kentucky Yes.
Yes. I was born in northeastern Kentucky near Huntington, West Virginia. It's Ashland, Kentucky. And then Georgetown's right outside of Lexington, Kentucky. So we kind of butt up right up against Lexington. So I've lived down here, longer now than I did in Ashland. So it's been about 20 years or so that I've been in Georgetown. I went to college here and I loved it. So that was the one thing I got out of going to college down here was that I liked the area. So I stayed.
Okay. So upon with you being a manager at a restaurant and you're like, hey, you know what? This isn't it. And you put yourself through EMT school. Was Georgetown the only place you applied for, or did you apply for many other places?
Oh, yeah. So when I left college, like I said, I didn't have an idea of what I wanted to do or where I wanted to work or how to become a firefighter. I just knew I saw some Georgetown firefighters when I was in college. I was like, that seems like what I want to do. I really don't remember why fire service was what I wanted to do. I was just drawn that way. And so I just started applying. I applied from Ashland, which was on one side of the state, to Paducah, Kentucky, which is all the way on the other side, roughly about 6-8 hours apart. And I was just shotgunning it. I just applied wherever there was an application. And never got anywhere with it. And finally just got a little beat down with spinning my wheels. And I was like, well, I got to do something. I was getting married to my first wife roughly in a couple years after that. I was like, I've got to do something. So I just abandoned applying for a little while, evidently, and just went into more of a career of restaurants. And just to make ends meet for the family, I had to kind of just move on. So, but other than that, I got about into it, and restaurants were fun, high energy, lots of stress, same kind of like structure fire, lots of go, go, go,
Okay.
commanding little troops around and everything. So,
Right.
but it just wasn't, it wasn't something I was willing to sacrifice my family and the rest of my life for. I was, that just, there was no, I don't know how to explain it. There was no meaning behind it. It was just work. There was, I could look at my kids now and say, hey, I missed maybe a couple birthdays or something, but I was doing something meaningful.
Right.
Then I was like, I'm just serving people something that they want to eat, and that
Right.
just wasn't good enough for me. So.
Right. No, I understood. Understood. Understood 100%. So upon getting the acceptance letter or however it worked for Georgetown,
Sure.
what was your process to actually, walk through those doors?
Like as far as just becoming a firefighter?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So when I stepped down from restaurant manager and I went to EMT school, I finally figured out that that was one of the few things that was holding me back, because especially at that time, the hiring pool was so high. I had nothing but work ethic to bring with me. So I finally just went to EMT school, got my EMT, and then started the process all over again. Started applying for everywhere, just trying to get my foot in the door. I actually was hired first by a fire department called Winchester Fire Department. It's on the other side of Lexington. And so I spent my first 3 years there, and it was a fire-based EMS, so a lot of buggy calls and stuff like that. But I still lived in Georgetown. So I went through a 14-week recruit class in Winchester, worked there for about 3 years, and finally I applied and finally got in at Georgetown, which is more of a first responder. It's not fire-based EMS. We do the big calls, codes and, chest pains, all that kind of stuff as far as the EMS side, but we don't actually run ambulances. So that was an added bonus. But I wanted to work where I lived. I wanted to be part of the community. I wanted to take a fire truck to my kids' school if I needed to. I mean, that kind of stuff meant just as much to me as, the department. So,
Oh, understood. I get that. I get that.
yeah. Yeah. And then
For
when I walked
the
in the door, oh, I'm sorry.
No,
So,
go ahead. Go ahead.
when I walked in the door, here at Georgetown, it was, I'd finally gotten to know some people that worked here. So that helped me get hired. This department was going through that, what was it, the recession at the time. So they were having some struggles. I was the first hire in years for this department because of they even furloughed a couple people before, I was hired. So, that all that kind of settled down, and we finally got in, and I was a recruit class of one. So, and it was just a month of just onboarding, but it was good times. A lot of old guys that were here, a lot of old firemen that had lots of experience and time. It's much different fire department now than what it was when I was hired. So
Okay.
not necessarily for bad, just different.
Right. Right. No, I mean, I get it. It's not always bad, but like you said, different. So, okay. And for those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us a little bit about Georgetown Fire Department, the size, your amount of personnel,
Sure.
call volume, things of that nature.
Yeah, so we do, like I said, we don't run ambulances, so but we still do about 4,000 runs a year. We have three engines, one ladder truck. It's a actual ladder truck. There's no pump on it or anything, so we run a ladder crew. We've got about 40,000 people here in Georgetown. We do have Toyota manufacturing here. It's the biggest Toyota manufacturing plant in the world. So at any given time, we might have 80,000 people here between work hours. So really just depends. A lot of traffic. We have two interstates that kind of run close, I-75, I-64, and then Lexington, of course, is growing. So they're starting to butt up against the, city limits as well. So it's really becoming a lot more urbanized and residential around here as well. So a lot of garden apartments popping up like crazy. Shoot, we got a lot of assisted living and elderly folks that are, I mean, they're building facilities like that left and right around here. So that's a challenge we're running into as well. But, we have, structure fires are subjective, I guess, when you look at the runs, because
Right.
it says we have a ton of structure fires, but true fires, I'd say we have, gosh, I don't know, 10 good ones a year, if you want to count them as good.
Right.
Yeah, so
Right.
but we do good. I mean, it's growing. The The run volume when I first started was 1,500 runs a year, and that was in 2010.
Okay.
So in 14 years, we've over doubled our run volume. So this city is growing like crazy, and it's where the fire department is still at the same staffing level as when it was in 04, I believe. So, we're starting to really pick up and get busy. It's been good. It's been good.
And how many stations?
We have three stations. Three
Three
stations. We're
stations.
fighting for a fourth, but you know how hard that can be at times. So.
Right. And what's your minimum staffing across your apparatus?
Minimum staffing is 14, 15. So we fully staff four on our truck, and then minimum staffing is three on the engine. So let me do the math. It says 369, and then four, and then a battalion chief. So 5, 14. So it's 14 total.
Okay. And preferably you would like for the truck not to be below four, but it can be if needed.
No, it cannot be
It
now. They
cannot be.
recently changed that in the last couple of years. It used to could go down to three, but we depend on so much work of our truck crew that just going down to three was just too much for three people. You could argue it's three's too not enough for engines, but one step at a time. So, we classify our truck, obviously. First responsibility, search, rescue, and then of course ventilation, forcible entry. Now that bleeds over into maybe a second due engine. Our second due engine, if the truck's real far away, is going to assume that kind of search rescue role if initial attacks already happen. But we like for that truck crew to be our initial search crew. But it's all placement and response dependent.
Okay.
It comes down to it. So.
Okay. And if a residential structure fire comes in within the city limits of Georgetown, what is your first alarm complement?
Okay, so we have it'll be all three engines, our truck, and we actually have an automatic agreement, aid agreement with our county fire department, and they send one unit as well. So it's usually, unless it's a big commercial building, it's usually an engine. But if it's a big commercial, they'll send their ladder truck.
Okay. All
So
right.
not too bad. We do the same thing for them. So if they have a fire, we'll send a unit of us of ours as well to them. And if it's, and then we have kind of a second alarm, third alarm situation where we'll call more county units, or we might even call Lexington to help us, depending on the size of the incident. So they've done a really good job of thinking ahead on bigger incidents if we need help. So.
Okay. And, EMT basics, or do you guys do advanced, intermediate, paramedic?
All basics, all
All
basics.
basics.
We
Okay.
have some paramedics, or we used to, but we don't require it. And honestly, most people don't go for it anymore. So,
Okay. All right. So I'm going to fast forward just a little bit. You
sure.
finally get accepted. You wanted to work, for Georgetown because that's where you live. That's where you wanted to make a difference at. What was it like walking through the doors again, but this time with the department that you really, that's what your goal was.
Oh sure, yeah. That makes sense. Let's see. It was actually really good. This is where I wanted to be. It was actually the first place I applied long before I went into the restaurant business. This is the department that inspired me probably the best that I can remember to be a firefighter. So when I was able to walk in here and be a part of it, it was really good. It was really good. They have a lot of camaraderie around here. At that time, we had motorcycle clubs. We had union was doing family events. All that kind of stuff was really what drew me in to wanting to be here because the brotherhood was really strong. And it's not weak now. It's just different, like we talked about earlier. It's just a different style. Kids don't eat together like they used to. Like when we were first starting. It's a different. It's a different game, but they're still close. They're just it's in different ways, But that was one of the biggest things that really sparked my love for this job was when I walked into this place and they focused on, working hard, focused on training, very progressive department. It's, still to this day, we're not afraid to change if it's for the betterment of the department. And we're ahead of the game with a lot of different things. There's There's always something somebody's passionate about, whether it's flows or hose loads or ladders or certs. I mean, and we're very welcoming to at least hear them out and try it out and see what's going on. And man, that makes a huge difference. It makes a huge difference in when somebody feels like they're valued and they care, whether we change it or not. If you just are willing to listen and hear them out, that makes all the difference in the world, you know. And
Definitely.
that's what I love about this place, for sure.
Okay. And you know, with you being a member now with Georgetown, back then when you first started, was there a particular crew or particular individuals you sought after to get that information to kind of emulate? And how important is that for anybody new coming into a department?
Yeah, there was definitely people that I would gravitate to, you know. There was and When I was young, I wanted to be a hard charger, you know, and then I wanted to be on those crews that were like-minded. And, you know, I still understand to this day, our engine one is our busiest engine by far, or at least it was at the time. And it was, they were always on the fires. You know, they were the way our kind of stations are situated at worst, no matter almost in the entire county, they were second due, you know. And you know that meant a lot, you know. Now you had to pay your dues with it. You had to you, they also got more overdoses, and they got more all the stuff that people don't necessarily like when they just want to fight fire. But so you had to earn it. You had to, you know, earn the right to be in the middle of it. And so those crews, I mean, there's a couple captains that are long retired now, but that I really gravitated to for mentorship. And you know, I just like the way they work and the way they treated their crews. And, you know, so that was important to me when I finally made it as a company officer down on Engine One myself. You know, I tried to model myself and, you know, give my own flair to it, but, you know, be like them, you know, and really inspire those, hopefully, you know, younger than me that they would want to do the same thing. So those crews and those people that trained hard, worked hard, wanted to be in the middle of it, didn't avoid work. You know, those are the ones that I really followed the most when I came here. So.
Okay. And speaking of, you know, when you promoted, how long did you wait to go to the next step and why?
Okay. Yeah, so it's so I did 3 years in Winchester before I came here. And then, you know, they didn't have a terms of service clause when I first came here. So I tested when I first got, I don't know, it was about a year on after I came to Georgetown. So about 4 years total, I tested. But I honestly, you know, wasn't looking to get it, to be perfectly honest. I was looking to see what it was like so I could kind of prepare myself. Well, that didn't go over too well with a lot of the guys that currently worked here. So we put in a terms of service clause, and, you know, mostly because of me. So, and so it, you know, it works. I ended up finally getting promoted after 8 years in the fire service, and that was pretty close to what I liked. I love leading people. You know, I was a manager at a restaurant. I know it's not the same, but you know, you were still taking people and leading in some aspects. So it wasn't that I was just new to life when I was 27 when I was hired into the fire service at all. So I was, by this time, I was well in my 30s, you know, when I finally got promoted. So I can make the argument that I probably still could have waited an extra year or two, but I think I promoted at the right time, about 8 years.
And that rule that was created. So, how long does an individual now have to wait before they can decide to test?
5 years. I think it's
Five
5 years.
years.
I think it might have been a little before. I think it might have been 3 when they first made that, but eventually we've built in an officer development program, and you know, so there's ride time now and acting officer. So it was just a basic, hey, we shouldn't let new guys test rule when I first started, you know. But now we've improved it and made it better. So now it's 5 years now. So
Okay. And what are the steps to get to, you know, what is your ranking system?
okay, so we have captains as company officers. So we do have an engineer position that's very new. We were wanting to get dedicated drivers for our ladder trucks. So they created this engineer position. Eventually, I think when we add more stations and stuff, it'll be more of just an engineer for all apparatus. But right now, it's just a good starting point for us. So then we have that, and then we have our company officer, our captain position, and then we have battalion chief level after that, which is what I'm at. So I'm a 40-hour battalion chief level, but we have our shift battalions as well. And then our fire marshal is a battalion chief level. And then above that, we have two assistant chiefs, one of prevention and one of operations. And then we have the big chief, and that's it.
And your firefighters, do you just have firefighters or firefighter one, firefighter two, seniors?
Okay, so we go through the IFSAC system. So we have the IFSAC firefighter one and two, all that basic stuff. And then once they're kind of with us, you're just a firefighter. So there's no levels within our department. So
And the engines, as far as the driving position, do you rotate the firefighter, or because you said your ladders have the dedicated engineers?
So we actually have a very strenuous release process to become a driver operator. So if you come out of our 14-week recruit class, you have 6 months that you have to focus, especially on backseat skills. So you have to reevaluate with your crews and your shift on you can do just the basics, and then we have a little evaluation process that involves their battalion chief to get released from their 6 month backseat skills. After that, they have another 6 to 12 months that they get released as a driver operator. So we have a prerequisite standard of training that they have to do, so many hours, so many tests, so many things like that. And then we have an actual pump release panel that they have to come in on an off day and do a certain amount of skills and orientation of apparatus in order to pass, in order to be approved to drive and be released. And then once they get into that position and they're able to drive, it's really just kind of crew and company officer dependent on who drives. As long as you're released, when I was a company officer, I wanted the most senior guy driving me because he knew where he was going, he knew what was going on, he knew how I worked. We'd let the newer guys kind of get up there and do some stuff every now and then, but if they ever asked me who I wanted to drive, they already knew the answer. So I was like, if you want to train the newer ones, you do it. But if you're asking me, then I'm going to put the guy that I know knows the game. Because I mean, you can make the argument that the company officer, yeah, he's important, but if you don't have a good seasoned driver operator that knows the streets, knows how to what's going on, knows where to go, if you don't have that person, then it don't matter who the company officer is. So
No, definitely. Definitely. One of the questions I definitely want to pick your brain on, because some may disagree, but I like that you do that. So you mentioned, for promotion, it's 5 years before you're allowed to test. And so with Georgetown being a smaller organization, whenever you hear, or I've had discussions with others, like if your department size is not that big, like everyone usually says, well, that's just you're kind of hurting your department, and we're not that big where we can do that. But how do you guys maintain your pretty much your manpower pool, where you're not running short because you're not letting individuals promote too fast? And like, so how do you fill those voids if someone's absent or sick or something like that?
So as far as like an officer or something like that?
But
Okay.
I just like the fact that you have that 5-year rule. And so essentially my question is, do you feel that hurts your department?
Honestly, I think in some aspect we're probably a little lucky on the way our retirements happened and the newer ones coming in. I mean, there had to have been a little aspect of luck, but we also have the acting officer program. So even you don't have to have 5 years to be in acting, you actually only have to have about maybe three. So, when there's a company officer off or a battalion chief off, then you have that acting that moves up and fills that role. Now, you still have to have, for our department, we do like 120 hours of acting time. So there's a lot of scenario kind of, programs, run reports, all that kind of stuff that you're trained on and released onto. before you can ride it as an acting officer. So it's really kind of stepped out pretty well for us as far as filling voids and moving people into those positions. And what it does is when you get to that 5 year mark that you're able to test, you at least have some kind of experience as a company officer in the acting role before you get there. Now, it doesn't always mean that you're successful at it, but it does give you some sort of training.
Okay. So I'm assuming if your battalion chief is out sick or on vacation, a captain moves into that role and then
Correct.
a relief officer or however you title it moves up to the role of the captain on the apparatus.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Okay.
And so we've got it really kind of stepped out. We try not to over manage it, obviously. You want to give people some leeway, but at the same time, in order to fill driver spots, acting spots, even all the way up to the battalion chief, there's at least some sort of training and relief and release process for each level. So
Okay. And how did you guys come about developing an officer development type program? Because I only ask because, it's very easy for departments to go, okay, we're gonna do a lieutenant's exam and a captain's exam. But to further educate and give that individual, more education, do you see a officer development program as really successful beyond the basics of this is how you do a structure fire, and then all right, you're out in the field. Go.
yeah, no, it's it really is. It works well for us. That rule that kind of caused for as far as testing, it kind of snowballed into our training program as well. So at the same time, I mean, it's not something I'm necessarily proud of, but it just happened that way. Where they didn't want people with low experience at Georgetown testing. They also wanted to make sure that if somebody was riding officer in that acting position, that they had enough time and experience as well.
That makes
So,
sense.
yep, it does. It does. So what happened is that's at the same time we made that kind of you can test in 3, 5 years. Well, they also created this 120 hours acting officer development. So you had to already be released to drive before you could even train as an acting officer. So they moved it in there, and then we went into this training, and what they've the chiefs long before I was a battalion chief created this little system of, okay, these are the topics that you have to train on. You have to record it as a company officer. You have to record your training with them. You have to submit it, and then all of this training records and battalion chief's approval goes to the chief of operations, and he gives it the blessing. And so that person has to be released by the entire, chief department pretty much in order for them to even ride as an acting officer. So it works pretty well, and we try to base it off what they're going to see even in the promotion process. So that way they kind of have an idea of what's going on. We try to make sure they know how to handle gas calls and structure fire calls and EMS calls, and there's always that learning curve. It's riding an acting officer is not the same as being an officer. It's much
Absolutely.
different, and there's only so much you can do, and just time and experience sometimes are the only things that are going to solve those. So we try to force some time into them.
No, understood. Understood. And is there a little bit of incentive with that?
As far as financially,
Sure.
So when you're released to ride an acting officer, we have a little bit of a percentage pay bump
Okay.
for it's not much, but we're kind of subject to the city policies on a lot of that kind of stuff, so we do our best. But there is an actual pay increase if you clock in as an acting officer, and then if for some reason, let's say a officer goes down for an extended period of time and you have to fill that role, there's even more of an increase of an hourly pay when you have to fill that role for like, I can't remember exactly what it is. It might be like 3 months or more. You actually get a decent pay bump for that because you're kind of filling that role permanently for a while. So.
Okay. All right. Love it. So, and at what point in your career so I'm assuming you promoted from firefighter to driver
Yep.
and then driver to captain.
Yes, sir.
Was that transition easy? And why did you, after a while, decide, like, hey, I want to be in that front right seat?
That's where I always wanted to be perfectly
Gotcha.
honest. I love it. I love it. I mean, you could probably, depending on what day now when I'm in this role, you could probably ask me if I wanted to go back and I'd say yes. I loved it. I loved leading men into battle for no other way of comparison it there. I love developing younger firefighters. I love the station life. I wasn't, boss, but it was great. It's where I wanted to be when I was hired. It was where I wanted to be when I left it. But it's the best spot for me, and I felt like I could make the most difference with my personality in that spot. I feel confident in the spot I am now. I'm training, running recruit classes, dictating shift training, getting out there with different crews that maybe I haven't worked with before, and learning them, and it's just different, but I'm older and I can't always be at the tip of the spear, in my personal opinion. So there was a point where I, for the betterment of the department, I needed to move on into something, a little more influential in different ways. So, but that front right seat was, that's where I wanted to be, and I loved it. I loved every bit of it. So.
As far as now, your opinion on leadership, company officer, if an individual out there or that's listening to this eventually wants to get to that role of company officer, whether it's company officer of an engine, ladder, rescue company, whatever the case may be, besides just having the title and the hardware on your uniform, what does being a company officer mean to you?
Well, I was listening to Lamping's podcast with you not too long ago. Man, I thought I was talking to myself or listening to myself talk. I mean, he says it just, perfectly. I mean, you got to be a great person to be a great company officer. It's got to start there. So many things he said just resonated with me, and I'm not going to quote him because I can't remember him at the time, but I promise you that they really hit the right spot. In order to be a company officer, you got to be a good firefighter first. You can't just be a company officer just to be one. I didn't, just because company officer was where I wanted to be, didn't mean that I tried to skip through all the other processes. I wanted to be the best fireman I could be. I wanted to be the best driver, pump operator I could be. I read leadership books. I've had management experience. I knew that that would be a good spot. But then I also, when I got it, I didn't just sit down and say, I made it. I pushed myself physically and mentally to learn, took extra classes, even though I'm not the hugest, classroom kind of guy. I still took my fire officer one, fire officer twos, instructors, all that kind of stuff that I knew would benefit the people that worked with me. And then I took time to be there for them, not to learn their families, to learn who they were as people, to understand that, we can't just train 12 hours a day. They have to be able to have some downtime and feel at home just as much as they can be firemen. And at the beginning of my company officer career, that I probably made a lot of mistakes with that, but I learned over time. Being a father probably was the biggest leadership lesson that I've ever had in my entire life. Being a husband, learning how to give and take and understand that you can't just yell and tell them what to do, that kids don't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. And so if you want to be a company officer, if you want to be a great company officer and be in that, my advice is first start with yourself. Better yourself. Show others you can work hard. Show others you can do the job, because then once you're in that seat and you have to tell somebody to do the job, they know you're not just making it up, that you know what you're doing. You don't have to know it all. That's not necessarily what I mean, but you have to, people have to know you're willing to do what you're asking them to do, even though you might not end up doing it. And that's one of the biggest lessons I had was, I tried to stay in better shape, than the people I worked with, not because I was going to do most of the work, but they knew that if they needed me to do the work, they could. I had to make the decisions and talk on the radio and all that kind of good stuff that ne didn't necessarily mean I was going to be hands-on, but they knew if they said, "Hey, Cap, I need your help on this," that I was going to be there and I was going to be able to do it. I wasn't going to be the first person vibing. So, and
No,
that
that's
makes
important.
that's a big confidence booster when you've got a guy that's got 6 months on and 19 years of life, and he's looking at this old guy that's already running out the front door because he's running out of air. That's not where I wanted to be. He's got to be able to trust me to get him out because he's new. I'm supposed to be the experienced guy that knows what to do and how to handle it and do all the job, not expect him to just do all the work and me still be the first one out the door. So, and that was important for me. It kept me focused.
No, that's 100%. I love it. It's 100% facts because, this job, the older you get, and I don't care what anybody says, the older you get, your body takes more time to recover. But the older you get is also not an excuse to do less, especially with the amount of people that we're hiring that are super young. Yes, you want them to be able to see, hey, the captain expects me, or the officer or lieutenant expects me to do this, but how do I know they can do it? Well, you got to show them that you can do it. So I'm with you on that 100%.
Yeah, we've got, I mean, the residential fire is the same here as it is in New York City, but we're bringing 14 to the party. We got a lot of work to do. We can't be out of shape. Now, I can't make people get in shape necessarily, but I can make the argument that we can't be out of shape when we've got to do the same job that some municipalities and stuff have the luxury of 50 people. We got to do the fire still is expected to go out by the public, no matter where you live. So we've got our job to do, and we've got to be able to do it to the best of our ability.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay. Now you're a battalion chief over training.
Yes, sir.
So I'm assuming that wasn't always the goal, but when the opportunity arrived to you, what was your decision making in accepting that? Because accepting it, you come off the truck,
Yeah.
you're technically, in some aspects, some people believe you're not one of the guys anymore, whatever the case may be, and you stated you're on a 40-hour work week. So why'd you accept
I don't know.
it?
I mean, it's actually a fairly new position for our department. It's only been I'm the second one, and our chief of prevention now is was in this role, and he was the first one, and he had it for maybe I'm just guessing about 3 years. So it's only about this position's only been around for about 3 to 5 years. I love training. I love it, and I want to make sure that the younger ones and the ones, that are coming up are able to get that good training. We just had our largest recruit class, since 2007, since a SAFER grant year. This last winter we finished. It's only eight people, but that's a lot for us. And man, it's great. I mean, you see these young, motivated kids. I mean, they're all kids now to me, and they just want to do this job. And it's not like when you and I were kind of brought in, where you had those hard-nosed, seasoned, old-school kind of firemen that just told you what you thought and didn't necessarily explain themselves. I feel like I can make a difference because of my years as a company officer. I've learned, and my years as a father of two boys, I've learned how to speak and explain. Trying to think of the best way to explain it. I'm trying to be traditionally hard-nosed, but also bring that aspect of explaining the why. And that I'm not always successful at it, don't get me wrong, but I feel like we shouldn't lose the past and the way to build grit and work ethic. We shouldn't lose that, but there's definitely a better way that we can do it. And I'm still learning it. I'm still trying to figure out the best way. If I figure it out, I'll let you know. But right now, I'm doing my best that I can is to build relationships with these kids, let them understand that I can do what they do, I'm not afraid. I'm not just gonna stand over you with a cup of coffee and just tell you to do more. I'll do it too every now and then. And then push them and encourage them to go farther than they ever thought they could. And it's because I do it to myself. I wasn't successful, but I just got out of one bad tour, six. I made it for like an hour and a half. Maybe not that long. I can't remember what it was, but it was great. I'm 45 years old and a 40-hour chief now, and I've got everything to prove to myself. So I just keep trying to push myself and stay relevant and stay part of the game. And that way, when I go down there and or go out here in the PT yard and I'm, pushing these kids, they can look at me and say, "Well, he's not just in there in the office eating donuts. He's out there doing something." But at the same turn, now that recruit class is over, I understand the difficulty it is to feel like you're part of the guys. And everybody says that chiefs they have a hard time remembering where they came from. And that is real. And that's not necessarily because they do it. It's because when you become a 40-hour person, you're in a different world. And it's really hard to not necessarily remember where you came from, but just remember that you're in the same career. We're on 24/48, and for the line guys here, and they come and go, and they work weekends, they do that, but you've got these admin chiefs that are just kind of in and out, and they have meetings, and the big chiefs are meeting with mayors and everything like that. You don't feel like a fireman, and that doesn't give them a pass, myself included, but it's not as easy to keep that mindset of I'm gonna, I'm structure fire ready, So it's tough, and there's a lot more experienced chiefs than I am that may listen to this that probably have the answer and probably know how to do it. And I'm not speaking for them. I'm just saying I can see, the difficulties of remembering where you came from. And I feel like I'm, overly trying to remember where I came from. I'll just put fire gear on and work out just to make sure, But I'm conscious about it, and I've got a little more time than maybe the chief of the department does to do something like that. So, I try to give them a little bit of grace, and try to, they did the job, and try to remember that they're not intentionally forgetting where they came from. It's just their job dictates a totally different world than 24/48ers do.
No, definitely, definitely. First of all, I want to say thank you for talking about that, because I think it's important that whether you're on the truck or not, the fact that you decided you went and you enrolled in OBT, you didn't make it, but it's still the attempt. Because to me, the attempt and getting there is the greatest step above anyone that just talks about it, but they don't do anything about it. You know what I mean? Same way for people that take smoke diver courses and that aren't successful. Of course, you want to be successful, but it's the fact that you put yourself out there and you put yourself in an uncomfortable situation. That right there, that's leading the way, you know?
Well, you mentioned it. I failed at Georgia Smoke Divers a year before that. You've had Eric Vidal on here. I was his initial buddy that, when we
Small
first went
world.
down there. I know. I mean, I lasted what was it, about a day and a half. I think it was more closer to the day than, but I just didn't have the I didn't have it in me. I just couldn't make it through. I don't necessarily, I didn't feel upset about not getting through. I did my best. I was kind of a late sign on in it. That's not an excuse. I should have been training for years before that, but it was good experience, and I would recommend any firefighter to start working out now and to do these OBTs and smoke diver programs. They're good stuff, and just because I failed out of them doesn't mean that it was a bad thing or that it means that somebody else shouldn't try it. So, But they were awesome experiences. I wish I'd have found out, or they were created long,
Sooner.
about 10, 15 years ago.
I think the thing is, it's now getting so much hype. It's getting so much play, on social media, and one of my things is I've met several smoke divers, but there's always a bad batch in every group. But at least the ones that I spoke to have personally said, hey, if you go your entire career and you're not a smoke diver, it doesn't mean you're a terrible fireman. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, yeah, being a smoke diver is great. They have they have that creed, and they're taught like, hey, you are not better than anyone else. Of course, you're gonna have some that boast a little bit more, and that's fine. That's fine. But like, one of the things that hit me was just if you're not one, if you never attempt to go to a class, but you're still hard charging for your department, and you're not wearing that shirt or that hat, doesn't mean you're a bad fireman.
Oh yeah, I 100% agree. I definitely didn't leave there feeling like I was a bad fireman. Honestly, the training and the focus that I had to put in to even attempt that, man, we had fires after that class, that GSD class I was done, where, man, I felt focused in there. I had my wind under me. I was able to be, collected and with it to make decisions. I mean, that alone was worth it, because there was times in my life I wasn't as in good a shape, and I was huffing and puffing, and I was, once you're out of shape, your mind breaks, and wasn't able to make the calls I wanted to, because it all started with my personal fitness. But GSD and them, it didn't work out for me. But man, that we've had people that have talked to me about it, and I say, go do it, train. I can help you a little bit, but I didn't make it very far, so I can't really help you a ton, but it was a wonderful experience. And like I said, I wish I'd have found it when my mind was a little stronger.
Yeah, and it kind of goes back to the thing. As you get older, this job, this is my opinion, and if you want to argue with me, that's fine. But as you get older, the job becomes more and more harder on your body. And yes, the biggest thing you could do is stay consistent with your workouts, try to stay flexible, stretch, but the job doesn't get easier because you get older. It gets harder. And then when you add on top of the fact that we're hiring such a young group of people that are motivated, they are ready to go, their body recuperates faster. That should all, for me at least, I'm about to turn 40 years old at the end of this month here. My youngest backstep is 19. He just turned 19 years old. I remember when I was 19, and it's crazy for me that it's like the pages have flipped on me because I remember being 19 looking at a 40-year-old. Now I'm 40 looking at a 19-year-old. And it's like I have to work harder so I can keep up with them.
And what a lot of people don't think about is the older you get, when I was in my mid 20s and early 30s, I was, for lack of a better term, I was dumb. I was willing to just push myself to just stupidity. When I'm pushing 45 and I've got, sick parents, I've got kids, I've got wife, I've got, like, it's hard for that not to enter your mind when you're pushing yourself to utter exhaustion, you add in age and stuff on that, and your mind finds those reasons to quit, and it's really hard to fight against them sometimes. It's not an excuse. You got to keep going. You always got to keep going. And I failed, and but failure's okay with me. I
That's
failed a lot
right.
in my life.
Right.
So
That's right.
I'm actually, I before I got on this Zoom call, I'm writing an article about failure, just to submit and stuff. So failure has directed my life in wonderful ways, as long as you use it correctly. So
Definitely.
I don't mind failure as long as something comes out of it. And I failed those two things, but man, I've made awesome friends. I've learned a lot about myself. I've learned a lot about other people in the fire service, about other departments and how they work, and new training techniques, new ways of building training towers. So much has come out of it if you can look for the bright side of it and not just your own failures, that it's worth it. Anybody's listening to this, do it. Start working out. Do it, do it, do it. Keep applying, push yourself.
Love the message, Chief. Love the message. I definitely wanted to ask you what your opinion is on this. So you are overtraining for your entire department. It is my opinion that whether you're a training captain, training chief, whatever your title is, if you are overtraining for your entire organization, that to me is a very important role because you can set the tone of how you want your department to operate. You can set the tone on the passion that you want your members to deliver when it comes to training. Because we all know those, anytime in service training pops up on the calendar, you're working that day, it's like, hey, we got in service. Someone's gonna gripe. Someone's gonna be like, it's hot. Like, why do we need to do this? But like you being the training captain or battalion chief over training, you can have so much influence. And I dare say that role, you can put that role up there, at least in my opinion, with the fire chief, because the fire chief is doing the administrative stuff, the meetings and all that, but the training chief can make or break the way the department operates and how they view training.
Oh yeah. There's a lot of thought that I put into it. I mean, even just the time of year, I know RIT training in July, nobody wants to do, because it's hot,
But it's a necessary evil.
but so I tried to do it. I try to do it in the winter time, but then it never fails. It snows 10 inches and it's below zero. And then you can't get the fire trucks out because they don't want them to freeze up. And then all of a sudden you're adjusting. And so you want to make the guys happy to where they'll do good training and push themselves a little bit. But then, it's hard to adjust for the time of year, especially around here in Kentucky. It's always something. It's a monsoon or it's snow or it's too hot or it's humid as heck. It just never fails. So I try to adjust the schedule just for that alone. And this is my first true full year. I was promoted in August of last year. So this is my true full year of figuring this yearly schedule out. I try to stay about 6 months ahead. We do a lot of buy-in from the line crews. So I'm really trying to make sure there's, we have lots of instructors. We promote people getting their instructor. And so I try to reward them for getting their instructor by letting them teach classes. So they come in and they teach for the three shifts a topic that they're passionate about. And I try to just be their logistic help with it. And but also at the same time, I feel the need sometimes to interject my experience and my knowledge within that training class that they have without stepping on that instructor's toes. And that can be hard in itself. So, then there's stuff we have to do. We have to do EMS training to keep our EMTs up. We have to do hazmat training. Nobody wants to do those, myself included. But, but we have to do it. So, we have little programs where we spread it out, and make it not so hard to, that way you're not sitting down doing 12 straight hours of EMT refresher. I'm trying to sprinkle it out. And that was actually the training chief before me kind of figured that out with the EMT stuff. So, which was good. My personal push that I'm trying to put in here is basics. So I'm trying to make sure basics are throughout the year, search, ladders, extinguishment, all this kind of stuff, gear, fitness, basics, basics, basics. So, but I also want to give the line crews, freedom. So I build a weekend every month where they just choose what they want to do. That way they can, I just ask them to give me at least 2 hours of training, wrote up or something. If they pencil whip it, that's on their conscience. But, they have the opportunity to train with their crews or their whole shift, whatever their battalion chief wants to do. We got eight recruits, orange shirts that kind of are online. I mean, there's nothing better than a built-in excuse of a new guy to for training. You don't have to talk anybody into it. Everybody's on board with it. Just train, train, train. So I try to let them have that opportunity as much as possible. And that's what I'm learning. I'd stay flexible, focus on the basics, get the ones done, get the things that we need done within throughout the year, and then we'll see how it goes at the
No, I
end.
love it. I love it. I really do. And one thing I want to preference too is I mentioned how, in my mind, the training chief captain, is on that level, on that plane of fire chief. But also, you can only do so much. Like you can tell your crews, hey, this is what I expect. This is what I expect of you, your performance. You can show them. But at the end of the day, it's ultimately down to that company officer
Absolutely.
because, I don't like when sometimes chiefs of training or captains of training get a lot of flack or a lot of BS, and it's like, well, you don't do this, you don't do that. If the chief is showing you, laying down the groundwork, at the end of the day, it's up to the company officer to make sure that his or her crew can perform the skill and can perform the task.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We don't really do valuations or anything. We used to do some quarterlies and stuff like that. We get the crews out and just look at it. I don't necessarily disagree with that. It was a little logistically hard. And plus, who am I? I mean, I'm not that I'm a bad guy. I don't know what I'm talking about, but I'm not going to evaluate another shift battalion chief's crew and say their shift is bad. That's that battalion chief's role. In our department, we're that size that we can be that way. I'm not just going to swoop in on my 7 to 3 job Monday through Friday and tell them that they are struggling in certain aspects. I'm going to watch them when they're training on these basics I assigned to them. I'll be like, they struggled a little bit on that. I'm going to sneak that back into the training schedule again and again. And, and I try to throw out maybe an email of just review of training, putting the good points and the bad points and the recommendations and stuff like that. But I don't want to just micromanage this. I hate micromanaging. I hate being micromanaged, and I definitely don't want to be it myself. So,
Right.
I'm trying to figure out how to train and make sure everybody's the best they can be without forcing training down their throat. And it's a balance I'm still learning. So.
Yes. No, it is. I totally get it. I really do. But at the end of the day, like you said, nobody wants to be micromanaged, but I think at the end of the day, those crews, those company officers that maybe aren't meeting the mark, at some point you need to look at yourself in the mirror. And firemen tend to have a problem with individuals that are telling them what they've done wrong. It's kind of like certain firemen want to be babied their entire life. And it's like I kind of equivalent that to when you're raising your own children. There's an age that they're gonna do babyish things, but there comes a time where they should mature and develop, and that's when you need to go, hey, like you need to improve in this area. And yeah, they can get mad, but at some point, if they want to get good, it has to click. Like this person's right. Like, I think no firefighter should ever be belittled, but you should be able to take criticism if it's trying to make you better. And I think some individuals have a problem with that.
And that's an art in itself. It's just like going back to like those new recruits. If you don't explain the why, if you don't have that relationship built with that company officer to be able to say, hey, you all didn't do very good on that. You should work on that. If they're automatically either defensive or expecting you to do it for them, then that's almost your fault from years ago. You haven't built that relationship with them for them to expect honesty from you, and not because you're being mean, but because you're trying to help them. So a lot of this stuff where we're trying to hold people accountable and stuff like that has to be built years before we actually decide to hold them accountable. You can't just start doing this blanket punishment to hold people accountable, but have never built that relationship with them to come to them one-on-one and say, hey, Bob, your crew really stunk. I love you. They need to be better. We're going to do this again soon. And if he can't say, well, I don't necessarily agree with you, but I trust you. If he's not in that point, then you failed your relationship with him long before that conversation.
Okay. Love it. Love the tips. All right.
Yeah,
I want to talk about your article, Leave It Better Than You Found It. What was
Yes,
your
sir.
inspiration behind that?
Oh, I'm raising kids was one inspiration. I'm only 45, but understanding my own mortality, what am I leaving behind? Raising kids in recruit class and in the fire service, our fire department got really young really quick. We're a fairly young department paid, so that first wave of initial firemen all retired within the last 5 to 10 years, and we brought in a lot of young ones. And I honestly see that in the younger generation, my oldest son's generation. It's, people will talk about them all they want, but they have drive and focus. They just don't know what it is because nobody's shown them. And so a lot of you've got this pent-up energy of this younger generation, in my personal opinion, what I see, that all they need is somebody to tell them that failure's okay, that working hard's okay, and doing something for your fellow firefighter, your family, your community is okay. You don't have to be famous online. You don't have to be all this stuff. If you can affect your community and your fire department and leave it the better than you found it to try to improve it, that's all that really matters in our lives. People get tied up in national politics and all that stuff, and there ain't one president that's come to my house and asked me what to do. But I live down the street from the mayor. The local politics might matter a little bit, but I want these people that hopefully, if they read it, to understand that there's a, have that passion when you're a firefighter. When you're a seasoned firefighter, nobody respects you more as an older firefighter than having experience, not clock in time, but like experience. And when you're a company officer, if your company officer shows you as a young fireman that he wants your best interest at heart, like a good coach or anything like that, you'll do anything for them, and that's that development part of being a company officer. I think it's important. And then once you get up into the chief's level, if you're not serving every single person that's under you and the community, you're just there for the badge. You're there for the pay raise and the high three fired or high three pension. You're there for that. You're not there for the people below you, and it shows. We have great chiefs right now, and you can tell that they want our best interest. They're there for us. They might have different priorities because they see from a higher view than maybe a 2 year fireman, so they don't necessarily remember where they came from, but they do. They're fighting for the stuff that they're supposed to fight for, pay and fire trucks and stations and all that kind of stuff. So you got to serve. You got to serve. And I want to leave it better than I found it. So when I wrote that was kind of me wanting to leave something, leave something for somebody to actually develop themselves and say, okay, well, I can put my own spin on this, but this is what I have a kind of a roadmap to make XYZ Fire Department better than when I was. Before I was hired, and that's what matters to me. So,
Hey, can't fault you on that. Love the answer.
yeah,
Love the answer. My last question, I always like to ask the guests.
sure.
Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
I would either like to be right here as a training officer, or if I really just miss being with the guys, I'll try to transfer over to be a shift battalion. I don't see myself moving any farther, but I mean, times change, people change. I can't plan out that far ahead. I've got about 2.5 years before I can legally retire, but I don't count down days of retirement. I don't think I will retire at that moment in time, but and so there's no telling what can happen then. But you ask me right now, I'm as high as I want to be. I want to train. I want to get into gear. I want to help these guys, smoke up a building and train their people. I can do that in either of those roles, you know. And if I feel like I miss those day-to-day runs and that camaraderie with the guys, when that if that day comes, then I'll move over and be a shift battalion and enjoy it.
Okay. I lied to get one more question because it popped in my head.
No, you're fine.
Does your 19-year-old, does he have any aspirations to go in the fire service or no?
Does he does he.
Does.
He never had any in high school. Actually, if you asked him when he was in high school, nah, I don't want to do it. And then just one day, he just came up, said, I think I want to get in the fire service. So, and he wants to work for this fire department, which is, you know, I feel like it's a big honor for me. I mean, I don't know that I wanted to work with my dad, you know. For him to want to come to this fire department and work where I've worked is it makes me proud. He's applying for other fire departments because you know how it's like, you know, you can't just pick one. You'll never get hired there if you only go to one. So, so he's out there doing. He just did a written test in a neighboring county. He's actually in Lexington's process. He's going to do their process, and you know, his chips will fall where they may. I try not to actually get involved in it. I want him to make his own path. You know, if he asks me a question, I'll answer it or advice, but. You know, I if he won't enjoy it as much if I do it for him.
That's
So,
right.
you
That's
know,
right.
and he won't take advantage of the opportunities and the work and stuff. So I just say, hey, how's it going? That's all I do. My youngest, he is a wild man. He's into football. He wants to be a soldier, fireman, all wrapped into one. So there's no telling what he's going to do when he gets that age. He might switch and just work in an office someday. There ain't no telling.
Okay. Awesome. Well, Chief, I really appreciate your time. I loved having this conversation. I love your mindset. Like I said, I always love hearing chiefs that even though they're not riding the actual apparatus, but they remember that they still want to put their gear on, they still want to train. And the fact that you opened up about going to smoke divers and going to OBT, and yeah, you weren't successful, but like I said earlier, the first step is putting in for it. Because you know, I know so many people that are like, I want to do this, that, and the other. And then, you know, they might make a remark about somebody failing out. And it's like, well, you know, I would have passed, but it's like, well, if that's the case, why didn't you put in? But you put in the time. And so I just love talking fire service shop with you. And I just want to say thank you.
Well, yeah, I love this conversation. I'd do it anytime. Well, you just let me know. We'll do
Okay. All right.
it
I'll hold you to it. I'll hold you to it.
again.
All right.
No,
Like I
that's
said, though, no, thank you. Seriously, I really appreciate it.
fine. Oh, well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it as well.
Sir. If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.